Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director at The Griot.
And I'm your co-host, Jaron Keith Gaynor, managing editor at The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, did this year teach us that nothing is more important than health and family?
So, G, as you know, this week we're going to do something a little different because, spoiler alert, we are off for the holidays. So we've compiled some of the best moments of our inaugural year of Dear Culture under the theme Family First.
That's right. It's been an honor to have these tough conversations over these past few months, and we can't wait to continue these conversations in 2021.
You know Black mamas always rise to the occasion. So here's another conversation with Courtney on what it's like raising Black children during unprecedented times.
I don't think there's any parents drinking or smoking blunts during the day while they've got their kids doing math and social studies and they're on a conference call. I mean, okay, maybe I might know a few, but cut them some slack a little bit. You know, if the kid is on the Zoom at the time necessary and he's got a few more Cheerios to finish off, I really don't think it's a crime. I mean, granted, we're all trying to make the best of this and we're adjusting. So there's gonna have to be a little bit of that grace that I talked about extended to the kids and to the parents. If school starts at 8:30 and a Breonna Taylor announcement comes out at 8:15, my kid's not going to be dressed with her hair done, ready to go like she would have been if I didn't have a job. But I do. We're in a pandemic. Shit happens. Now, for the parents who are, you know, smoking the blunts on camera, changing behind the Zoom screen, I want a clown. That's a mess. Get it together. But I get it. You know, laptops are portable. These kids are on iPads. I might not realize that he just walked into my closet while he's on the Zoom call. I might be rushing out to change my shirt to get on my own Zoom call. So I think that some of that stuff was hilarious. Obviously, it's a bit of a mess, but we're gonna get there. We're gonna figure it out. Keep the blunts outside anyway, because, you know, parenting. But other than that, I thought that, you know, I needed that laugh and it made me feel like I wasn't doing that.
Yeah. I know how I feel when I'm left to babysit my niece and my nephews for just a few hours or, God forbid, overnight. And they're not little children, right? These are like the 14, 13, and 11. Them kids are crazy, all right? So I can only imagine having a tiny little human who you're supposed to first off try and keep together, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm also trying to work and then also trying to like make sure that this child is fed and all this other stuff, right? Like, listen, let people be in their house, whatever comfortable way. I personally, no. So if I keep my daughter in pajama pants or something like that, she might doze off during class. So maybe she does need to be in something that's actually like, hey, let's get ready for school so that she can feel more awake. But if that's not the case and my child is learning just fine and participating just fine in her pajamas, leave my baby in her Powerpuff Girl pajamas and mind your business.
Yeah, and the thing is, that parent probably 4 out of 5 days of that week, their kid was dressed. But if they're not, just know some shit went down this morning and they're doing, you know, what they can do.
Are they here? Are they participating? If so, shut up and leave the baby alone and leave these parents alone. They are not okay. These parents are not okay. The kids might be fine. It's the parents.
Here's what that clip didn't highlight that I do want to talk about, because I'd be remiss if I didn't. And that's two things. One is that, you know, nowhere on that list was there any guidelines for people not having a Trump sign in the back of their Zoom, their kid's Zoom, a Confederate flag, perhaps. Two things I've seen in my own child's Zoom and been quite irritated about. When my kids see Donald Trump's face, they say, bad, that's the villain. Like, to them, he's this person who is a real life villain. So seeing it in their teacher's background or one of their classmates' backgrounds is really pretty offensive and sometimes traumatizing to kids, particularly kids of color. And the other thing that's happening is that Black kids, much more discriminately, are being chastised, threatened with expulsion for things that teachers are observing in their homes, whether it's a bright neon green toy gun or a BB gun, I think, that fell over and a kid just leaned it back up against the wall and went back to class. They sent police to his home. So no one was in danger, because last I checked, no one's in the room here with us but my own kid. So he wasn't pointing a gun at the screen. He wasn't making a joke of it or threatening anybody. And they sent the cops to this child's house. So it's kind of mind-boggling that even when our kids are at home with us, they're still discriminated against when it comes to schooling. And that's something that even a pandemic isn't changing.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, they love to criminalize our children. They love to, you know, subject our children to adultification all of a sudden. The same things that wouldn't even be blinked at if little Susie or Timmy did it. You know, little Shauna and little Courtney can't get away with those things. You know, right. Little, I don't know, Daquan can't get away with those things. I think it's so frustrating. Again, as a person who don't have any children, right? But what will happen when I do? You know what I mean? I think of, let's say COVID doesn't go away till like 2028 and I'm here with a child and I'm, you know, have virtual schooling my child. Is my kid still gonna have the same issues that we're dealing with now? Yeah. Bless you. Bless all parents. I give every single one of you all props right now. It is not easy being a parent. I at least see that for sure. But I think just the amount of sacrifice that I've seen parents have made, and granted, it's your kid, you're going to do that. Well, I would hope that you would do that anyway. But to be able to figure out a way to get past this ridiculous hurdle that we're all dealing with. You know, not a lot of people are able to do that. And I hope you know how blessed and how fortunate you are, Court, and you know how loved you are, because whatever we can do to help, man, this is a crazy time for everybody. But I think, I don't know, I hope everything from, we have new leadership who actually knows what they're talking about and what they're doing, so that maybe this doesn't have to be a new normal for these, you know, young people.
And normalizing it for them, I think, has been the biggest struggle. And that's the thing that's, you know, happening with time. We wear masks when we go outside because there are germs out there and you can't go to real school because, you know, we don't want you to get sick or make your teacher sick. And for now, that's the story, and I'm sticking to it until I see some real measurable change when it comes to the way that we're spreading this COVID and the way that we're spreading this dangerous rhetoric that poisons our kids' minds.
This past Father's Day, our Chief Content Officer, Todd Johnson, shared some love and light on what it means remembering our Black dads while also raising sons for the future.
Talk about what it means to be a Black father, what kind of conversations fathers are having with their children, and what we need to do to ensure that the next generation of Black kids are aware of what's happening around the world, what's happening around the country, and how they can be supported and loved. You know, Todd, I know that I don't have kids quite yet, but you are a father. How have you been processing the recent events going on across the country? And what kinds of conversations do you want to have with your son someday soon?
Man, that's a tough question. I'm all over the place with that because there are so many moments where as a father, I just want to turn away. I just want to turn away from the news and, you know, give my son, who is about to be four next month, I just want to give him a hug. Just give him a hug and tell him that, you know, tell him sorry that the world is the way that it is. Because, again, he didn't do anything to deserve to sort of grow up in this kind of climate. And then on the other hand, you know, I'm blessed and fortunate that I'm in his life. He has a loving family around him. He has all of the support in the world. And so I kind of have to snap out of it and get back into father mode, and we will get through this mode. So I'm sort of dismayed and pained on one end, but I'm incredibly optimistic and hopeful because, you know, I know that as he gets older, he'll be the one, you know, making the change that I will be proud of 20, 30, 40 years from now. So I never really knew that it was going to be like this when he was born. I didn't put it all together, man. You grow up and you just think life happens. You know, you don't know what your father is going through as you're growing up, other than, you know, you're playing and going through life and school and just kind of living it up as best you know how. But now as a father, you're not only processing what you go through on a day-to-day basis, you are trying to sort of live your life and shield your son from everything that he has to face in the world. So it's not even a burden, man. It's a role, a responsibility, and something that I have fear and optimism for, if that makes sense.
That's very powerful. I have to say, you know, Father's Day, it can be a little depressing for me because, you know, I lost my father. Todd, I know you lost your father as well. And I just want to also give a word to those who are grieving on Father's Day. You know, something that's been very helpful for me over the years is to focus on the love that me and my father shared. Sometimes I think that when you lose a parent or lose a loved one, you think so much about what you lost. And what I try to do is focus more on what I actually had and what I still have. You know, that energy, you know, it stays with you for the rest of your life. Those memories stay with you for the rest of your life. How has Father's Day been for you, Todd, without your dad?
It's tough, man. It is tough, G. I hear what you're saying about focusing on the time shared. I lost my dad to colon cancer when I was 26. I'm 34 now. And so these last 8 years, it's been up and down. I didn't know anything about grieving and what that meant to lose him at that age. But, you know, one thing, and you said it yourself just there, and one thing my dad always told me is to be grateful and to cherish the times together, because he lost his father at a young age to, you know, hypertension and other complications. And he would always just talk about, man, we used to do this. His dad was a postal worker. And he would talk about those memories of being in the back of his dad's, my grandfather's, you know, postal truck and taking the work truck to go see football games and hanging out with him. So, you know, this, the last 8 years and this day specifically, sure, it's a heavy day. But when I think of the time I spent with him, you know, playing sports, having conversations, laughing, eating, traveling, talking with family, spending quality time, that gets me through the day and that gets me through the year. And of course, that's something that I'm going to pass on to my son and impart on my son to cherish all of that time together, because those memories you have with loved ones, in this case, your father or my father, our fathers, you'll never forget that.
Speaking of unprecedented times, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley joined the GRIO's Vice President of Digital Content, Natasha S. Alford, to talk about what's at stake for our educators teaching during the pandemic.
As you mentioned, we did talk about teaching and the risks that teachers face in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, and this is what she had to say about it.
Of course, I share these concerns and these fears, and, you know, not only for our children, but our dedicated educators. Can we just give it up to them that in the midst of this pandemic, they were very nimble out of commitment to their students and, you know, transitioned to online learning with little supports to do that. You know, I fear for them and their families as well. Anyone who's a part of the learning community, from custodians to food service to educators to administrators. And again, because we have not made those investments in social emotional wellness supports, we have charged our educators with not only being educators, but often being social workers. And now we're asking them to be caseworkers. And might I say, in some instances, they have had to be martyrs. Because we saw those educators, I believe it was in Arizona and one of the early states to be experiencing the surges, that lost their lives. We're already asking our educators to teach our children, to be social workers, to be mental health clinicians, because we have not invested in socio-emotional wellness supports. And now we're asking them to be caseworkers and to manage a public health crisis and pandemic. And so our reopening of our schools has to be driven by science. It has to be driven by data. And to be reopening our schools in the midst of a surge, and we see in Florida alarming hospitalizations of school-aged children, this simply cannot stand. And so what has to happen in the absence of leadership from this federal administration, the Trump administration, who said that they believe their role is to be the backstop. Imagine that. In the midst of a pandemic, they have been, quote unquote, leading from behind. So we've been behind from the very beginning because of their science denials, their criminal negligence, and their sluggish response. And, you know, I just don't know if they're just cruel, callous, clueless, or all three. But our decisions to reopen states, to reopen schools, must be guided by science and data. And so in the absence of leadership from the Trump administration and this GOP-led Senate, where this Democratic majority House has moved multiple bipartisan relief bills, including investments to support online learning, to ensure that it continues to be continuous, that there isn't learning loss, that we do not contribute to the achievement gap, to ensure that once the data and the science supports reopening, that our schools can do that safely and have the resources they need to retrofit infrastructure and do things like that. But this is just too premature of a move and a conversation against the backdrop of surges throughout our country when we still don't have a vaccine.
Such an important point for the parents of Black children, and that is that we have this constant need to ingrain certain, survival skills into them. And when your kids are forced to be confined to their homes, how do you teach them that? How do you teach them compassion for others when there are no others? How do you teach them how to navigate, injustice and, rude comments and, racist issues when there are truly no other people around them? And depending on the grade that your children are in, this is really the setting the foundation for how they see life. So there's this whole other emotional and socialization worry that we've got going about our kids. And like, what kind of actual humans are we capable of raising, within four walls of an apartment?
Since a lot of us spent so much time at home this year, we really got a chance to be nostalgic and watch some classic Black television. In this next clip, we went Black in the Day with Marielle Turner, Courtney Wills, and myself.
One of my favorite shows, A Different World, has been credited by some for being one of the largest contributing factors to Black people enrolling into college in the 1990s. Was this life imitating art or art imitating life? What do you guys think?
Well, for me, I think it was in many ways art imitating life. I think over the course of the 90s, especially, you saw a big influx of Black people attending college. A lot of them are first generation. And so I think, I don't know, I've also heard people say they were motivated to attend college by watching A Different World. So maybe it was kind of a mixture of both. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Was Hillman an HBCU? I distinctly remember looking for that when it was time for me to apply for colleges. And then now I can't quite decide if I remember it as being an HBCU or were we just looking at the students of color at a predominantly white institution?
No, it was definitely always an HBCU. So for those of us who followed all things like Cosby and, all of that back in the day. So, you remember from a Cosby show, you would always see Heathcliff, because that's how I'm going to refer to him, Heathcliff wearing these various like sweatshirts from these different HBCUs, right? And then you always got the background story of Heathcliff and Claire, that they met each other while at Hillman, and it was an HBCU. It was also like there was a whole thing of when Denise was picking what college that she was going to actually go to, and Grandpa Russell had to come in and basically explain to her, why this is such a huge thing, and just even going beyond the whole idea of just going to college and all the other stuff, and what is it that HBCUs can bring to you. As a graduate of an HBCU, shout out to Spelman, number one, I can say all of that stuff definitely resonated with me. I think as a kid watching A Different World just put so many things in perspective for me. One, it definitely let us know white people can attend HBCUs. If you don't remember, season one had that one lonely white girl, I believe her name was Maggie. and that was always a complex character to me. I wasn't really that interested in her, but fine. And then, you saw from after season one, when Denise, or rather Lisa Bonet, left the show, and they started to focus more on Whitley and Dwayne. And it was just so amazing to see. I can say, honestly, I was inspired to go to college. I specifically chose Spelman College. My top three choices were all HBCUs. It was Spelman, Howard, and FAMU. I applied to many other different schools, but I was like, any of these three pick me, I'm going.
As a single person, I must say, it made me happy and optimistic listening to all the Black love we saw this year in the wake of COVID, especially when Marielle and I spoke with Kadeen and Deval Ellis. Check it out.
Self-care is important, whatever that looks like to you. I've told people recently that my self-care method is putting my phone down sometimes. You know, a lot of people know it's for social media life and being on. And, you know, it was very daunting having to go through quarantine, not just dealing with the pandemic of COVID, but also racism. And that was draining for me, particularly being a mom of three Black men, having a Black husband. Like, it was a lot. So self-care was like, sis, put your phone down.
This year has been monumental and triggering for many of us. We lost some incredible pillars in our community that forever touched our lives and changed the world for the better. Please join us in taking a moment to show some love to some of our newest ancestors on the other side, such as Chadwick Boseman, Congressman John Lewis, Lucille Bridges, Kobe Bryant, Pop Smoke, Pamela Hutchinson, Betty Wright, and Little Richard. Your place in history will forever be cherished. We miss you and we love you. And for those struggling with the loss of a loved one, let's rewind Ryan Coogler's beautiful statement on the matter earlier this year while speaking on Chadwick Boseman's passing.
One of the most touching statements that I've seen online was from Ryan Coogler, who was the director of Black Panther. Ryan wrote, quote, "Chad deeply valued his privacy, and I wasn't privy to the details of his illness. After his family released their statement, I realized that he was living with his illness the entire time I knew him. Because he was a caretaker, a leader, a man of faith, dignity, and pride, he shielded his collaborators from his suffering. He lived a beautiful life, and he made great art. Day after day, year after year, that was who he was. He was an epic firework display. I will tell stories about being there for some of the brilliant sparks till the end of my days. What an incredible mark he's left for us. I haven't grieved a loss this acute before. In African cultures, we often refer to loved ones that have passed on as ancestors. But it is with a heavy heart and a sense of deep gratitude to have ever been in his presence that I have to reckon with the fact that Chad is an ancestor now. I know that he will watch over us until we meet again."
We want to remind our listeners to support your local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will highlight this week is Izzy and Liv. Their goal is to make sure that the things Black women love are reflected in the things Black women buy. From apparel for women, children, and teens to gift boxes, home decor, and bath and beauty products, you can visit their website at izzyandliv.com. That's IZZYANDLIV.com. The Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast, and share it with everyone you know.
And of course, please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments. We love those, to podcast@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma and co-produced by Sunda Sasan, Kyrie Williams, and Kevin Y. Brown.